March 6th, 2025. And normally on these Wanpra evenings, we've been listening to Ajahn Amaro reading the collected works of Lumbur Cha. And I thought I'd just like to give a talk this evening because we've only got a little over 3 weeks left in the winter retreat. And I've been a little bit on the sidelines for the past couple weeks with this sciatica or pain malady, whatever it is, whatever we want to call it. And it is definitely on the mend. It's up and down, but trending fairly strongly upwards in terms of healing. And but I think it's good to give reflections about heading toward the end of the retreat. And at the beginning of the retreat, there's that we did the 3 weeks of group practice, so there's a very strong sense of maybe being inspired or excited to practice for such a long period of time and be able to live in the monastery if you're part of the retreat crew, being able to live in the monastery for that period of time, or if the monastic community, that excitement that we'll feel, that the prospect of just being able to put down a lot of our duties that we have when we help run the monastery in the normal part of the year, and that sense of being able to be on retreat and to focus on, for the monastic community, just focus on being monks, focus on being bhikkhus and doing bhikkhu things, meditating, memorizing, chanting, cultivating a sense of solitude. And this is all what we consider the heart of the samana life, the heart of the holy life. And then time passes. So at the beginning of the retreat, it seems like we have this long period of time ahead of us. And then time passes and things shift. The energy shifts. And we had some comings and goings in the retreat crew. We had two of our retreat crew members leave and one added. And then time keeps passing. And now it's March. And then there's a the springtime energy, nice feeling, nice temperature. The temperature this evening is very pleasant. And then for myself, I may have had plans about what I was going to do during the retreat, and then the body had a different plan, so the plan had to be shifted and adapted and changed. And I found being incapacitated with a lot of nerve pain for about a week. But then I thought, well, okay, it's getting better and it's getting more endurable. At first I was using Rhoda's walker to get around, and then I graduated to a cane. And then I got this amazing 2.5 hour massage yesterday morning. And I said, Thai massage from a very intuitive master masseur, and that he was able to reduce my pain by about 80%. Most of the big pain is gone, but there's still residual, and in order to free up a lot of these things, there had to be some pressure put on other areas. So then there's other little pains in different areas, and but the major, I would say the major trauma pain is gone, which is quite a relief, because I haven't been sleeping so well, and there's no, actually lying down is really the most uncomfortable posture for me for this period of time. And so it's been, on one level it's been good for practice, and another level, as the days wore on, is kind of like, I just want to sleep. Just one night. Just give me one night. And yet, maybe, and I feel okay right now. Maybe I don't need as much sleep as I thought that I need. And I have been resting at times, even if I haven't been falling asleep. So just to give an example, and each night is different, but so the night before I got this amazing massage, so 2 nights ago, the pain in general, it won't allow me to sleep for longer than an hour at a time. So I ended up, and I didn't have to set a timer to do this, but the body would kind of naturally wake up after 45 minutes of sleeping. And I would get up after 45 minutes, stand up for a bit, sit for a bit, and get the energy flowing through the body again, and then I could lie down for another 45 minutes. So two nights ago, I slept in 5 45-minute sessions, and that was my night that night. And being on the back is quite uncomfortable because it pushes on the main kind of trauma spot. And then being on the side, right side, is kind of okay. But it also pulls on it a bit. And then being on the stomach was just sort of out of the question. But then I got this massage. So then last night was different. And he was recommending lying on the stomach, which I never sleep on my stomach. But he was recommending lying on my stomach to keep the stretch going, keep the parts that he was able to free up, kind of keep them freed up. And I did find, after the massage, I was able to lie on my stomach, and it was the most comfortable posture to be in. And I found also that being in that position, the pain didn't pool up. And I say pool up because that's the only way I know how to describe it. That, say, a week ago, if I would lay on my back for, say, 2, 3, 4 hours, then getting up would be excruciating. The longer I lay down, the harder it would be to get up, and the pain would kind of flood into my legs, and it would just be really, really, really painful. Be like that for maybe a few minutes before it cleared up. So I found that didn't happen, like, say, on the stomach. Doesn't matter if it's 1 hour, 2 hour, 3 hours, the pain doesn't pool up in the same way, and that's very, very a big relief. However, there is still the kind of nexus of where the pain originally came from, and that nexus of pain is still painful. It's not radiating all over the place, all over the leg, but it's still just there. So I found, so last night, thinking, okay, finally, I'm going to get a rest. And I lay down on my stomach, and then the pain was there, and the rest of the body was completely comfortable. But the pain was there, and it was just enough that I couldn't fall asleep. So I was able to be still, and I was able to feel that the body was more or less comfortable, but then there was that one pain point, and I just laid there on my stomach last night for 3 hours, just didn't fall asleep. I wasn't able to fall asleep, but I think I did get some rest. Even if it was just enough pain to not allow me to fall asleep. And then at 1:30 in the morning, kind of get up, thinking it'd be nice to be able to fall asleep somehow. And then thought, okay, well, I'm gonna lie down on my back, even though I know it's gonna kind of, the pain's gonna kind of pool up. Maybe I'll be able to fall asleep. And sure enough, I was. Got 2.5 hours, and then got up, and it was that kind of pain pool kind of came back, but it dissipated fairly quickly. It was, I guess I'm getting more used to it, to just kind of push through it and to get out of bed. So getting out of bed, it was like the experience was kind of like just pushing myself up and okay, I'm up, okay, let's stand up slowly, okay, that's very painful, okay, it's passing, okay, I think I have enough rest, so then once I was up, then it dissipated and I felt very good again, almost no pain, I can walk around, don't need the cane. And then I thought, okay, today, after the meal, I'm going to go up to my kuti. I'm just going to rest all afternoon. I'm so tired. And so I I went up to my kuti, feeling good. And then, okay, I'm going to try to lie down. And I was able to sleep for maybe 30 minutes and kind of change positions. And then I'm thinking, oh, you got to be kidding me. The pain is coming back again. And so it kind of woke me up again, got me up. I was just thinking, yeah, lying down just isn't working. And so got up, sat for a bit, walked around for a bit, then felt good again. And I started getting into this mode of, so I was at my kuti for, say, 3 or 4 hours this afternoon, and when I was sitting there, I got into this mode of the mind was saying, yeah, it shouldn't be this way. It should be getting better quicker. I would like it to be resolved. I would like it to be done. But then I kind of, hey, that's getting a bit unwholesome. That's getting a bit unskillful. So I thought, well, no, it should be this way. It is this way. Because it is this way, there's nothing I can do about it. So there's just that mental resistance is just adding suffering on top of suffering, and it's unnecessary. So I was able to then shift the mind into, okay, this is just how it is. It's just difficult to lay down and just fully accept, and that's just how it is. And for anybody who's thinking, oh, you should take some painkillers, you should take some ibuprofen, already tried it, doesn't work. So, the next step would be, you know, taking some really strong opiate painkillers or something. But I feel at this point I'm getting a lot better already, so I don't think I need to do that. Don't need to go that route. And that could cause other problems, which might not be so good. Like I think opiates, they actually cause constipation. So anything you do that might solve one problem, sometimes it causes another problem. So that's what the Buddha's talking about, giving attention to the perceptions of resistance that are coming up. Are we resisting the way things are? It shouldn't be this way. It should be better. It should be happening faster. My practice should be progressing faster. I shouldn't be where I'm at right now. I should be further along. I should be further along the path. Well, no, if you should be, you would be. All of us, wherever we're at, however we're at right now in this moment, that's exactly where we should be according to the truth of the way things are, according to the way nature works. And this is what the Buddha's really talking about when he talks about karma. This is the natural law. It's the way things work. Things are the way they are based on causes and conditions, and it just can't be in any other way. The causes and conditions have led to this point now. And if we can't accept it, if we resist the way things are, that's dukkha, that's stress. So that creates a certain type of karma, which conditions what we're going to experience moving forward, moving on. If we can fully surrender to the moment, fully accept the way things are, and then adapt. So we can think of that as a mantra: surrender, accept, adapt. Surrender, accept, adapt. If we're able to do that, that's the way of non-suffering. And when we follow that, it's not that we've reached the complete ending of suffering, but if we can practice the way of non-suffering in the moment, then that's the path. Then that's going to condition things as we move forward. It's going to condition them in a different way. We learn how to do it. So for myself, experiencing things like this in the space of the winter retreat, it's kind of a perfect time. And everything we're doing in the moment is conditioning how things are going to be moving forward for us. If we want to know how things are going to be in the future for us, if we're thinking, well, what am I going to do after the winter retreat? How are things going to be? We could just look at what is our mind doing right now. If our mind has doubt right now, it's going to have doubt in the future because doubt is a habit. If our mind is accepting and surrendering to the moment right now, that's becoming a habit. So that's how things are going to be going, moving forward into the future. If our mind is thinking, maybe I'm going to make this or that plan, maybe I'm going to do this or that, then that's the planning mind, the mind that's looking forward. That's also a habit, so that's going to condition the mind to when we, you know, say a month from now, the mind's going to still be looking forward, because looking forward is a habit. So those habits that we have now, that's how the mind is going to be. However, whatever seeds we're planting now, that's how the mind's going to be. And there's a way to attend skillfully to the mind, and there's a way to attend unskillfully to the mind. And the Buddha talks about, how does one attend unskillfully? This is ayoniso manasikara. How does one attend unskillfully? And then the phrasing goes something like, who am I? How am I? How was I in the past? How will I be in the future? Who will I be in the future? Having been what in the future? What will I become in the future? Or one attends unskillfully thus, how am I? Who am I? What am I? Having been what will I become? Who was I? What was I? How was I in the past? So these are all past, present, future. One attends unskillfully in this way. So there's that self-obsessed proliferation. And we all do this. This is normal. So it's not a judgment, because everybody does this. This is normal. Everybody does it except those beings who have seen through it. The ones who attain insight. So that's how one has ayoniso manasikara. One has that self-referenced or I, me, mine referenced obsessions of mind. So then how does one attend skillfully? How is it with yoniso manasikara? Wise attention, skillful attention. How does one attend skillfully? This is suffering. This is the cause of suffering. This is the ending of suffering. This is the path leading to the ending of suffering. So it's depersonalized. So whatever is happening in the mind, this is suffering. Suffering has a cause. Okay, what is the cause? Okay, there's a resistance to the present moment. It shouldn't be this way. So, okay, well, there's a cause of suffering that we can see. Cessation of suffering is just seeing through it, just seeing that that is the cause of suffering. That can lead to the cessation of suffering. If we truly see the cause, then we're going to want to relinquish it. And then there's the path, of course, the sila samadhi panya, the whole path that we can be cultivating. And there's bodily suffering and mental suffering. So I've been trying to apply this for myself, seeing that the body, this is suffering. The body only moves in one direction. No matter how much yoga or qigong or whatever, no matter how much medicine we take, the body moves in one direction. That's toward degeneration. The body ages. The body gets older. It's not to say we don't maintain it and do what we can. It's not to say we don't do yoga and qigong and take medicine and eat healthy and so on. But to know that even with those things, there's that inevitable degeneration. So this is suffering. It's inherently unsatisfactory. So it's not a refuge. So that's something that we can either resist it. We can either resist it, deny it, not want to accept it, but that's only going to compound the suffering. Or we can surrender, accept, adapt. We can really adapt to almost anything. For myself, I don't consider myself someone who's good at dealing with pain. I don't think I've ever really been someone who's really good or adept at enduring or dealing with pain. I wouldn't consider myself someone who's courageous and brave in the face of pain. I feel like I have my limits with pain. It's not like I could just face any sort of pain. I feel like, yeah, maybe there would be a point where it would be unendurable. And even during the 2.5 hour massage treatment that I got yesterday, at the very end, the masseur started manipulating my leg in a way that brought on the nerve pain again. And for 2.5 hours already, it had been quite painful on and off, and I could more or less endure it. But at the end, I reached my limit. I couldn't endure it. I felt like I couldn't endure it, and I actually tapped out. I actually tapped my hand. I tapped out of the massage at the very end. So I didn't perhaps get as much benefit as I could. He maybe could have gone 3, 4, 5 more minutes. And if I could have endured that final burst of pain, maybe I could have gained more benefit. But so I'm not actually someone who can. I don't feel like I can endure any type of pain. But there can be that sense of surrender, accept, adapt. How can we do what we can within our abilities? So coming back to those basic things, the Four Noble Truths, that's how we attend wisely. And I think it's good to emphasize this point of yoniso manasikara, ayoniso manasikara, especially that we have this precious time coming toward the end of the retreat. And because I've been dealing with my own bodily issues, I haven't been so available for interviews at this period of time and checking in with people. So I do want to stress the importance of those two things, that when we see our mind, how will I be in the future? What will I be in the future? Will I make the right decision in the future? What if I do this? Then what will I become? What if I do that? Then what will I become? And see that I obsession and say, well, the Buddha said that's ayoniso manasikara, that's unwise attention. How can we see through that in the moment, bring it back to wise attention? And it's a tough one because it is the strongest habit. It's the strongest habit to have that I, me, mind-centric mode of just, no matter how many times we hear the teachings, no matter how many times we study the Four Noble Truths, dependent origination, the mind is still going to be, what am I going to do in the future? How am I going to plan this? How am I going to be? What am I going to be? Who am I going to be? Or we do it toward other people, which is actually the same. It's the same mind state. Who does this person think they are? What are they going to be if they do this? What is it going to be? How am I going to be if I have to live with this person and that person's going to be, that person's like this, this person's like that? And we can start getting into those definitions of people. And that's also a function of Sakkaya Ditti. Sakkaya Ditti isn't just personality view, but Sakkaya Ditti is the definition of ourselves and others. That self-focused obsession. So can we see ourselves doing that when our mind is getting to that state of not just thinking about the future, but thinking about positing us in the future? And that is maha delusion. That is maha delusion in the mind, maha ignorance. But can we see that? And again, that might sound strong, but that's not a judgment. But when we see that for ourselves, can we catch it? Can we catch it? We all do this. The monks do this. The lay people do this. This is normal. But can we catch it? And then when we catch it, we see, oh, right, the Buddha said that's not the way we want to attend. So the way we bring it back is when the mind is saying, how will I be in the future if I do this, if I make this decision? How will I be if I make that decision? How will I be? So when we see that, the way we bring it back to skillful attention is just to say, oh, that's suffering. That very mental state is suffering. That doubt is suffering. Actually, doubt is maha suffering. Doubt is the hindrance, I think, which makes us suffer the most. It's such, even you can almost, it's almost visible. Like if you were to look in the mirror when you're in a state of doubt, you'd see the face is just crunched. The face is crunched in. It's a contracted state. So not it's not the expansive, you know, surrender, accept, adapt state. It's the kind of crunched, stressed state of what if I do that? What if I do, well, but I'm gonna do this and then do that. I think it was even one of the Ajahn Sucitto reflections that doubt, don't ever do that to yourself. Lumbar Sucitto, if you're a doubter, yeah, if you're doubting a lot, just don't ever do that to yourself. Can we turn it around? Can we turn it into a fresh, open, expansive awareness where there's that sense of we don't get tired of it. It's always fresh, always open, always refreshed. Doesn't get stale, doesn't get stagnant. There's mindfulness in the present. A sense of ease. Can we have a sense of ease which is sustainable and trending upward in quality? We can, but it really have to kind of put ourselves on the path in the moment. But how will I be in the future? What will I be in the future? What if I don't? What if I do that? Then what will I become? Okay, I'm gonna bring it back. This is suffering. I can't always do this. If I do this, I'm not gonna be able to attend to becoming this or that. This is suffering. So we can do that. We can do this. We can all do this. But we need to be reminded. So we do have this very precious opportunity to develop skillful means in the winter retreat. One skillful means is also to say, if we start thinking about the future a lot and thinking, planning, need to do this, need to do that in order to achieve this or achieve that, just, okay, well, I can set that aside. I can think about that later. Don't need to think about it right now. And that mental habit is really difficult to train. It takes a lot, takes time, and that has to be done over and over and over again. You know, it's kind of like using the analogy of sharpening, of when we sharpen knives or sharpen a razor. If we're just learning how to use a sharpening stone, and we really want to become master sharpeners. When I learned this particular skill, the learning curve was about 6 months. Just kind of, okay, I'm following the instructions. I'm doing it. Okay, I'm doing what they said. It's not sharp. That's because that intuitive skill hasn't been developed yet. So keep trying, keep trying, keep trying. Keep practicing, keep practicing. Keep at it. Don't give up. Don't give in. If we keep moving forward with something, we have to succeed. We can't not succeed. If we keep trying something, there has to be that time when we do succeed. So, okay, well, maybe I have to make a slight adjustment. Maybe I'll try this way. Maybe I'll try that way. And, maybe I'm rushing. Maybe I'm using too fine of a stone. I need to go back to the coarser sharpening stone first and work on that for a bit. So we need to try a lot of different things. And similar with that that thinking and proliferation, we might need to try many different things. Maybe thinking this is suffering doesn't work for us. Maybe we need to get back into our body more. So rather than thinking, oh, I need to think this is suffering, maybe that overcoming the one type of thinking with another type of thinking maybe isn't going to work for us. Maybe we need to get more into our body. Do some sweeping. Sweep some trails. Forget about it. Just forget about it for a while. Just leave it. Just set it aside. Get back into the body. Use our hands. That's the there's been the yoga practice still happening that I unfortunately haven't been able to attend recently, but getting back into the body, being mindful of the body, just setting the mind aside. The body is always in the present. And the Buddha really did emphasize that mindfulness of the body. For those who remember mindfulness of the body, they remember the deathless. For those who neglect mindfulness of the body, they neglect the deathless. That's another skillful means. Mindfulness of the body is a skillful means, which was lifted up and praised by the Buddha as being one of the foremost practices. So that's something we can do. Sometimes we need to see a visible fruit of our labors, and some of you have been practicing crochet. So that's something where it's a repetitive meditative activity where we can see that there's some fruit to our labor, where we can't always see that with meditation. That's a skillful means of coming back into the body. So any of these things it's all good stuff, as long as it's helping us to reconnect with the path, reconnect with the Four Noble Truths, reconnect with the present moment, reconnect with the body. There's been teachings on metta given also, some of the readings, and the few readings I've been able to attend, I've been enjoying hearing the other members of the monastic community giving very, very good readings, very good selections. Coming at things like metta from different angles, viewing it in different ways, and really looking at things, going into things, seeing things from different angles. That's how we start to understand them. And I think it's trying to find the right translation for something like metta. Is it loving kindness? No, absolutely not. It's absolutely not loving kindness. It's goodwill. Okay, well, that's correct, maybe in a certain context. That's what they say in Thai, usually wang di is well-wishing. That's the standard translation for metta in Thai. And or is it, you know, so I've heard different translations for metta as like non-judgmental awareness. I've heard that as a translation. That's good. That points to the moment, points to practice. So these words, different words are going to work for different people. The translation for me that works for metta right now is actually, it's not something I've always thought of as metta, but and different translations for metta have worked for me at different times, but based on having spent time with various Krupa Ajahns in Thailand, and I believe having experienced firsthand what it's like when a Krupa Ajahn has metta or spreads metta to me, and knowing that experience firsthand, I would say pure love is the translation I prefer for metta currently. So, but then, you know, in terms of a puritanical Theravada approach, that might not be correct, but that's my experience. That's my experience of it, of experiencing firsthand what it's like when a Krupa Ajahn has metta for you. So a lot of these things, we just need to look at it from our experience. And yeah, if somebody says it's wrong, that's fine. If somebody says it's right, that's fine. We don't have to be moved by that because we can trust our experience. So I think that's probably enough for this evening. These are just some reflections to put out there and hopefully plant some seeds for some fruitful practice during this last few weeks of the winter retreat. So wish everybody well, and I'll leave it there for this evening.